Good morning, everybody. How's everyone doing today? Excellent. All right. Hey, we're here today. We're going to talk about Office 365 directory synchronization and identity sign-in federation. We're going to have a good time. We've got a lot of interesting things to talk about. We tried to keep the interesting questions for this talk. So there's a whole lot of things that we've been hearing, that people have been asking. So if you're involved in identity synchronization or federation, it should be a good talk. Hey, we have quite a lot of content, but looking at the size, the number of people here, we can probably still take a few questions through if you want to ask them something topical. If you could come to one of the mics and ask us, then we won't have to repeat the question for the recording. That would be awesome. If anyone has a cell phone, anyone have cell phones? Could you set them to silent, please? That would be appreciated. So that we don't have to make up some joke about you if they ring while they're coming up. But if you want to leave them on, that'd be awesome as well, because that's always fun to have a joke about someone's cell phone ringing. Anyway, right, let's get into the content. My name is Paul Andrew. I'm a technical product manager on the Office 365 team, and I cover identity management on Office 365. And I have two fantastic program managers with me. Please introduce yourselves.
Hi, I'm Ross Adams. I work in, as Paul said, I work in the Azure Active Directory team. I look after a lot of the identity federation pieces as they connect to the cloud.
Hi, I'm Achal Saxena. I'm also a program manager at the Azure Active Directory, and I look at the syncing your on-prem directory to the cloud.
All right, thank you. So here's our agenda for this morning. We have about 75 minutes. We have a couple of slides up front just to level set a couple of things about identity management in Office 365 and how we use Azure Active Directory. Just a couple of slides there. And then we're going to be talking about some synchronization topics. We're not going to introduce you to synchronization, but we'll talk about some new things. There is a 200-level talk, a couple of them about identity management. So if you're watching the recording of this, go back and watch that first, maybe, if you're new to the space. So we'll talk about some federation topics, and we have a little bit of stuff that we want to cover about integrating non-Microsoft directories, if you're using SAML, LDAP, working with OAuth. Then we'll talk about the qualification program that we have for non-Microsoft directories, and we have a little bit on troubleshooting. So that's our agenda. Here's the first one. So first up, we wanted to talk about the two identity management systems that Microsoft has. And there is some confusion with customers when they go to sign in, whether they're signing into one or the other. So I wanted to take just a couple of minutes to talk about why we have these two and what their differences are. Now, but essentially we have one called the Microsoft account and one called an organizational ID as supplied by Windows Azure Active Directory. The Microsoft account is a consumer-based identity system. It's something that you could go and sign up for right now if you have a laptop or a smartphone. You probably all have one of these already, either if you're using Hotmail or Outlook.com, or if you're using OneDrive, the consumer version of that, to store files. There's a variety of Microsoft services that are enabled by this ID. It has a user agreement when you sign up for it between the end consumer and Microsoft, and it's got a few terms in there and things that you click through and read about. And so it's an agreement between Microsoft and the consumer, and it is a consumer's account. It's owned by the individual. It is something that Microsoft will probably send you mail. It probably has a mail account attached to it. You've probably seen mails from Microsoft on those accounts. And it is quite different to our organizational accounts that we have with Azure Active Directory. With Azure Active Directory, the accounts that we have in there are something that you as an organization, perhaps your company or some other organization will sign up for, will likely pay a subscription for. And once you've paid that subscription, you have a certain number of seats, of licenses that you can assign to different people, and you're handing out these identities to people in your organization. At this time, you own the relationship with the user, and your organization has some kind of contractual relationship with Microsoft. Microsoft does not have any agreement with the end user, and we do not send emails to these accounts. We don't send advertising. We keep the data that you own because you're paying the subscription separate from our consumer accounts, which there isn't an organization that owns the group. And also, because you own the whole organization, you can have a global address list, you can access all of the people, and your users can see each other and share files with each other and so on. So there's some quite significant differences between these two identity systems. What we're trying to do, and more as we go forward in the future, is to reduce the confusion that a user has when they come to a particular Microsoft service and they have to figure out, which identity am I going to sign in with here? And so we're working to try and improve that. You can see the start of that kind of work if you look at the Azure subscription portal, where you are able to sign in either with a Microsoft account or with an organizational ID into that service. So we'll keep working on improving that, but that's why we have these two identity systems. So the second introduction slide here is talking about these three different identity models that we have in the cloud. So I won't spend a lot of time on this. We have a cloud identity model where users are created in Office 365 in the cloud. And then we have two models where you have on-premises servers related to your directory. The first is where you're just synchronizing your directory into the cloud, and you may be also synchronizing the user's password hashes into the cloud. And so that's called synchronized identity. And that's one of the topics we'll be spending the most time on in this talk. The third model is federated identity, where in addition to synchronizing those identities into the cloud, the sign-in operation where the user's password is validated is federated with your identity provider running on-premises. So in addition to synchronizing all those accounts up, we configure that sign-in operation to be federated. So we have these three models. We're primarily talking about the second and third today. We have some content that we've recently made available which gives you tons of great advice about choosing between the different models that we have. And I'll summarize that here. The meta point here is you can change between these models. You can shift from one to the other and back depending on how your needs change as an organization. So feel free to make a choice now and choose the simplest one that meets your needs now, and then move in the future between them. And typically people choose cloud if there is no on-premises directory. This is the primary reason why people would choose cloud managed. If you have an on-premises directory, you typically do want to synchronize that up into Azure AD so that it can be used by Office 365. The primary reason that people used federation used to be because it enabled them to have the same password on-premises and in the cloud. And just about a year ago, we introduced password hash sync into the directory synchronization. So it's no longer required to use federation just to get the same password on-premises and in the cloud. So we can synchronize that password hash so that the user does have the same password in both places. So now, we recommend, and most customers are using directory synchronization with password hash sync, unless you have one of these scenarios where federation is still required. So it's a relatively short list of scenarios. There is existing infrastructure requirements, there's technical requirements, and there's policy requirements. If you have one of these scenarios in your organization, you're going to be wanting to use federation. And we have some more detail on a recent article published on blogs.office.com that describes each of these. If you glance at these and you go, hey, I just don't have any of those, federation is probably not what you're gonna want to start with for Office 365. But maybe if one of these things comes up in your organization, you want to change to it later. So we have here a bit of a terminology slide. A slide that we use to, it's sort of a little bit of a high-level architectural diagram, and it's a great way if we start with those orange boxes, directory and identity provider, we can talk about the different terminology that we're going to be using throughout the rest of the talk. So the first term is the directory. If you have an on-premises directory, that may be Active Directory or maybe another directory, then you're going to want to synchronize those accounts up into Azure Active Directory. For use by Office 365. We use them primarily in the global address list for Exchange Online, and for the people picker in SharePoint Online. You want to be able to see other people that you can connect to. We also use them for assigning Office 365 licenses and knowing who's licensed and what they can do and what access they should have when they sign in. So that's the orange line that goes up, and it goes up into Windows Azure Active Directory. Ross, do you want to talk a little bit about the Azure Active Directory pieces of that?
Yeah, sure. So there's a few different parts to Windows Azure Active Directory, as you can see there. There's a bunch of sort of what we'll call protocol endpoints that allow you to effectively communicate with it. So from the identity perspective, that blue arrow running down there to the identity provider is really on that right-hand side, the WS star, Fed, Trust, et cetera, as well as Shibboleth and SAML, we're going to talk about a bit more, and how they work with the identity provider you provide on premises. There's also the services that use that. So within Office 365, there's a bunch of different services that use different endpoints depending on the protocol. So SharePoint Online is predominantly a passive setup, so it tends to use the WS Federation, where Office clients that talk to SharePoint tend to use active clients. So you can see there are a bunch of different active clients within the stack from Office. So those are really the way that those particular applications are using those different endpoints. It's probably also worthwhile mentioning here, we won't talk about it a whole bunch, but there is a Graph API that Windows Azure Active Directory provides. And Graph API allows you, if you really can't synchronize your data from on-premises into the cloud, but you want to be able to programmatically create users in the cloud or do work to assign licenses, et cetera, there is a Graph API, or effectively a RESTful API, that allows you to do that. Similarly, there's a PowerShell API that allows you to do the same types of activities.
All right, so these are the different parts of identity management, and we'll be using some of these terms as we go through the talk. Okay, so we're going to talk about some of the synchronization topics. I'll hand over to Archil.
Hey, so before I go any forward, it's early morning and I don't want you to bore with repeated talks. Who doesn't know about Directory Sync Tool or DirSync? Okay, just one hand. I'll give a very short summary. It's a tool that you download from the portal, and it synchronizes your users, groups, and contacts from your on-prem single forest directory up to the cloud. It synchronizes around 150 attributes. By default, it's one-way sync. That means you only sync from your on-prem directory to the cloud. And by default, we do not sync passwords. So going forward, we've had a lot of questions about whether you can install DirSync on your domain controller or not. To start with DirSync, you don't require any additional servers or infrastructure on your on-prem to install DirSync. We just require one server machine, and it's good to go. You can install DirSync on your domain controller, but just a gotcha that DirSync also installs SQL Express. So just think about the resource constraints when your DC and your SQL Express that we'll be using. So generally, it's okay to deploy DirSync on your domain controller if you have not more than 10,000 users. We also now allow, have enabled installing DirSync on your Azure VM. There's a link to our TechNet article, which you can use to see how you can get that thing done. Now, we also get questions. How can you make your DirSync tool highly available? At present, you can only run an active DirSync client on one server machine, but you can create backups for your DirSync tool. You can create a backup for your SQL server and of the encryption keys that you use. And again, we have a TechNet, an article out there, which can tell you that how you can create a standby DirSync server so that if your active DirSync server goes down, you can just restore the SQL server and the keys, and you're up and running. You don't need to do any full sync again. It'll start with the Delta syncs right away.
So, Archil, if you can't have high availability, and I can't have a second machine sitting there able to take over in case that DirSync goes down, what's going to happen when that? If my DirSync server has a hardware failure or a networking failure and it goes offline and all I have is effectively a cold standby machine, mm-hmm. What's going to happen while that's offline?
While it's offline, so for that while, there is no sync happening. But then as soon as you get the standby machine up and running, you can either do a force sync, which it will just do the sync of the delta changes, or you can just wait for, and after 3 hours, because that's the delta time for dir sync, it will just take up the changes and keep on going again.
So the question is, what about the Office 365 clients?
Yes, so your users are up there on the cloud. They will continue having access. There's nothing going to happen for their logon. No problem at all.
And what happens when the original server comes back online?
So the question is, what happens when the original DirSync server comes back up online? Just to say, reiterate, you can only have one active DirSync server at a time.
So in other words, don't do that.
No, I think effectively, if you have a DirSync server and you decide to move to the warm standby, if you will, then it's not so much a bring the old one back online. You would bring the old one back up to its point and then, you know, effectively make it the warm standby and continue to use the active one, or you would flip back to it at some point. But you can't have two active DirSyncs running at the same time.
So hopefully what we've got across is if you do have a failure with your DirSync server, your users will still be able to sign into Office 365. They'll still be able to use Office 365. All that will stop happening is changes to your accounts, attributes, new user creations. Because that's synchronizing, that will stop. And the second point here is if you need high availability, we have ways that you can create high availability, but you can't have two servers running DirSync at the same time.
Before I go forward, as I said, by default, we do not sync users' password to the cloud. But last year, as Paul said, we introduced this feature for syncing your password hash, so that which gives you a same sign-on experience, that you can use the same credentials that you have been using on-prem. You can use the same credentials for your cloud applications as well. How many of you are using password hash sync? Good number. Cool. So as I said, password hash sync, you just take the user's password hash from on-prem to the cloud. As a lot of you might have security concerns about this thing, so I just want to briefly go over this. First of all, on your on-prem domain controller, it's not your password that gets stored, it's your password hash that gets stored. What DirSync then does is it takes this password hash from your domain controller and rehashes it with multiple iterations of SHA-256. Then the new hash that we now get is sent to the cloud using SSL. Another thing to iterate, that a person cannot use the password hash to log on into your cloud application or your on-prem application. Also, once the initial sync is done, we only sync delta changes. For example, if the user password on-prem has changed, only then that will get synced after the full initial sync. The other thing to remember is that in our password hash sync feature, it only requires for DirSync to be able to connect to one domain controller. It does not need to necessarily have connections to all domain controllers, just one domain controller. That is about it. We again have more details or TechNet article down below. If you have any other security concerns, come and talk to me. Sure.
Is it safe to say that can be a read-only domain controller?
The answer is yes. It can be a read-only domain controller. We act like a domain controller, so as long as it has the passwords in it, we can pull them from it. Just, Anshul, how often do we synchronize the passwords?
We sync every 2 minutes for passwords. Password write back. It's a new feature that we are coming up with our AD premium SKU. We had a question?
So just to repeat the question, the password sync domain controller, does it have to be a primary domain controller?
No.
So the question was, does the domain controller we want to talk to need to be the PDC emulator within the domain or within the forest? And the answer is no. Password synchronize, when a password is reset, it can be reset, depending on the client, only on the PDC, but it replicates out from there. So once it replicates out, we'll pick up that from the DC we're talking to.
So coming back to the password writeback, it's a new feature that is only enabled with once you purchase our AD premium SKU. Right now, if you turn on password sync, then your on-prem is the master. You can, your passwords can get synced, or even with Federation, your passwords can get synced up to the cloud, but you cannot, user cannot reset their password on the cloud. They can only reset it on-prem. With AD Premium SKU, we are giving this self-service reset password service through which users can reset the password on the cloud. How do you enable it? It's a feature in, once you purchase AD Premium SKU, then there's a dir/sync partial commandlet that lets you enable the write-back feature. When does write-back happen? As I said, if your passwords are getting mastered on your on-premise, for example, whether with Federation or with password sync, that's the only time when we write the password back. That means a user resets the password on the password on the cloud, and that's the only time we write it back to your on-prem. Regarding the security concerns, all the communication that happens through SSL, and we use public-private care pair of keys for encrypting the password that gets sent, and also for authentication purposes, like where your dir/sync controller is. Authenticating with our cloud service for the password sent. Yes?
What is the interface for doing that password reset? Is that in Azure?
So the question is, what is the interface for doing that password reset? It is in Azure right now. Yes.
Yeah, it's effectively the I forgot my password link.
Yeah.
On any of the sign-in pages, that'll take you into Office 365. In the Office 365, the question is, in the Office 365 portal, is there a link to it? And the answer is not today. Password change is really only if you're trying to log in and you forget your password. You can click on the I forgot my password, help me reset it. The change password button that's available within Office 365 for password syncing users is not currently enabled for those users, so they can't actually change their password. In the future, that may be enabled, but it isn't currently.
The question is, will it allow you to change your password using the web app? Right now, it's only for resetting your password, but in future, we are looking into supporting change of passwords as well.
Sorry, we can't hear you up here. We'd love for you to come to the mics, because then we won't have to repeat questions.
Just for the verification of the user, when you do password reset, what it used to make sure that user is the right one. Because if your password is wrong, you cannot log into email too.
So the question is, how do you? What are the mechanisms that we use for verifying the user's identity? So once you purchase the AD Premium SKU and you enable a user to use this particular service, we ask you a bunch of questions. For example, your mobile number and alternate email address and a bunch of other stuff, which we then, afterwards, during the reset, we use for verifying the user's identity.
All right.
Reset and change.
Sorry?
So the question is, what's the difference between reset and change? Password reset is used if you've forgotten your password and can't log on. So that's why we have a link on the logon page, which is I forgot my password. And this feature that we're talking about now enables you to reset your password having forgotten it and then proving your identity. Password change is, I've already logged on, I just want to change my password. It's expiring or something, I want to change it. And we have not yet enabled that from the cloud for on-premises users. So you'll still have to do what you have to do today, is when the username and password is mastered on-premises, you will have to get on-premises or get to a VPN or some other system to change that password. But we are looking at that in the future. I know we've been taking quite a lot of questions. I just, in thinking about time, I think we should move on a little bit. We have plenty of time for questions at the end. We'll still be happy to take a few questions, but I think we should move on off the topic and see if we can make some progress through the talk.
Sure. Okay. So Azure AD Sync, effectively what we're building right now is, this is in CTP. There's a number of features here. So the dir/sync client is single forest predominantly, does password sync, supports a bunch of hybrid models. There's a new CTP version, if you will, of what will eventually you know, probably in the longer term, replace directory sync, called Azure AD Sync. What Azure AD Sync does for you is it allows you to do a couple of things that a lot of customers have been asking for. One is a lot of customers ask about the way that I can reduce the attributes that I synchronize to the cloud. So DirSync synchronizes sort of 150 across users, groups, and contacts. What you're able to do with Azure AD Sync is be able to say, I don't use Exchange or I don't use Link, so I'm going to reduce that footprint. I'm going to effectively not sync those attributes up to the cloud. So it's a means of being able to sync the attributes that are required for the service as opposed to just blindly syncing them all as we do today. The other thing it allows us to do is, whilst you can in DirSync do some level of filtering, there is a certain amount of digging, if you will, within the FIM UI in order to do that. The Azure AD Sync tool allows you to see the rules in a much easily, more easily consumable model and add those rules much more simply. It also has a pretty straightforward UX for being able to do some of the attribute mapping. I'm going to talk a little bit about that when we come to the alternate login ID, where I want to use a different, say, a different attribute for UPN in the cloud. But similarly, if I had a different attribute for display name, say I chose to use a particular extension for, you know, maybe my common display name, then you could easily use the AD Sync tool to manipulate that attribute to do that correctly. It also supports a number of multi-forest scenarios. So DirSync today, single forest, multiple domain, doesn't have support for multi-forest. There's a number of simple scenarios that you would want with multi-forest that the Azure AD Sync does support. So it is in CTP, as I said, so it's missing a few functions. It doesn't yet today do any of the password sync, password write-back, or any of the hybrid scenarios. So there is no write-back within the tool as it is in CTP. It'll probably be resolved by the time we get to general availability, but right now the CTP tool is really about syncing data from on-prem to the cloud without any of the good features, if you will, of DirSync for write-back and password sync. What is coming is production support. So right now, as I said, it is a CTP. You can follow it through from that particular overview. It'll give you a link to the Connect site, sign in with your live ID, and you can download it. So it is available as sort of a public preview, but it's not production ready. Okay, it's not yet designed to be run in production, but it does give you an opportunity to feel your way through. Probably post-GA, so post-release, it will start to support additional scenarios around different AD or non-AD sources. What we're looking at sort of in an initial wave of that level of support will be around LDAP directories, so LDAP v3 compliant directories, as well as SQL or CSV files. So as a means of being able to synchronize up into the cloud, if you don't have you don't have Active Directory on premises.
I know you didn't want too many questions. Can I just ask one very quick one around this?
Please.
You mentioned earlier on the Graph API that's available for Azure AD. This new AD Sync, is that going to be using the Graph API exclusively for communication, or are you going to be using some of the old SOAP APIs that have just traditionally been used for creating and managing users in Office 365?
Good question. So the DirSync uses actually an endpoint different than Graph and different than PowerShell that is customized to the way that directory sync actually works. So it allows us to give bulk operations and do those same things. AD Sync uses the same endpoint, so it doesn't use the Graph API for that particular function, but be happy to chat more afterwards on your requirements in that area. So some of the multi-forest options you've got here. So today, if you're in production and you want to be able to sync from multi-forest, you need effectively the FIM or the Forefront Identity Manager product in order to be able to do that. It does come with a bit extra work to get it together, but it's certainly an option and the only option today for production. From an Azure AD Sync perspective, there's about three different multi-forest models that we support today. So you can look at disparate forests. So these are effectively forests that have no connectivity to each other. They might have trusts, but the key thing here is that the objects exist only in one forest. There's no sort of overlap, which is how we refer to disparate forests. In the case of a full mesh, so if you had two forests, and they really, what I was trying to do was run like something like Galsync between them in order to be able to provide a full view of the address book in each forest. That model is also supported and allows us to sort of specify simple join rules on how objects, precedence of objects, should be looked at. And the most, probably the most common multi-forest model that we see is people who have deployed an account and resource forest, something for Exchange, for example. The multi-forest sync that AAD sync provides allows you to easily say, oh, the master account SID is the way that we connect these two objects together, and then we know which objects to pull based on, you know, enabled and disabled accounts from the various forests. The last option is, of course, you can consolidate forests. So if your view of the world was, I have many forests, not for any particular reason, and I want to be able to consolidate them down, then you can certainly go through a process of trying to consolidate those forests and get them into a semblance of reality as you sort of merge them into the cloud. And certainly the multi-forest tools allow you to go down that path, start from many forests, and as you converge forests together, allow that information to come up and continue to be reflected correctly in the cloud. All right. And there's more information there on the TechNet article for that one. So where does the connector fit in this new model? So the connector isn't going away. The connector will remain. AAD sync can be thought of as, for the multi-forest scenarios, as dealing with the more simplistic scenarios. So when I have a mesh of disparate forests, Galsync forests, resource and account forests, all across, you know, varying degrees, AAD sync is the right, the connector is the right tool for you, all right? So it's really dealing with those much more complicated multi-forest scenarios that you are going to go through. And it still does require the FIM software there. So it's really, if you're not in the sort of simple forest, multi-forest mode, we're still going to push you down the connector model. So how do I sort of choose between them? So right now there is a choice between DirSync and Azure AD Sync. Main difference here is that DirSync is production ready. So if you are a single forest and you're multiple domains within that single forest, DirSync is still the right tool for you. If you want to actually get in there and start looking at sort of simple multi-forest to see how that would work in your organization, you can certainly start using and looking at the CTP version of Azure AD Sync. And as time progresses, these will probably merge into be, you'll choose AAD Sync as, you know, we move towards production readiness for it. So it's a pretty straightforward choice today. DirSync production, AAD Sync, CTP. But certainly, if you do have multi-forest, please, we're looking, you know, any feedback you have on the way the tool operates would be appreciated. So there was lots of questions about whether I can directory sync from one directory to multiple tenants. This was a problem previously. We didn't allow you to run more than one DirSync client within the same forest. You can do that now. So it is possible to synchronize and run DirSync more than once in the same Active Directory to two different tenants, if you like. You need to make sure you can handle the conflicts between the two. So a domain can only be verified in one directory. Okay, so one Azure Active Directory tenant can have contessa.com. It can't be then used in another Active Directory tenant. It's a singularity in that way. Right. So you need to make sure that if you have these types of conflicts where you want to be able to effectively say, I've got some users in contessa.com and I want them in tenant A and another bunch of users of contessa.com in tenant B and I want them all to log in as contessa.com, it will not work for you. All right? So really you need to think about how you're going to break your user population apart and get them into the cloud correctly. Now it's subdomain, so if you have us.contessa.com and amir.contessa.com and you want to put them in different directories, that's fine.
Okay. Different tenants.
Different tenants, yes. You can certainly do that. However, you can't, you can't share that same domain between them. You should also look at the way that you filter out the data. So how do you make sure that I get the right users into each directory? So you probably want to make sure before when you install the tool, rather than running a full sync straight off, which is a tick box option that's ticked by default, you probably want to turn that off, make sure you've got the right filters either at the OU domain or you can use attribute level filtering to make sure you get the right set of users filtered up for each of those instances of directory sync.
So we had one other topic that often comes up at the same time when people talk about synchronizing a directory to multiple tenants, and that's simply having two disparate tenants with separate directories and being able to collaborate between them. So I wanted to talk about this just at the same time that we were talking about the previous slide. We don't recommend people use multiple tenants. There are quite a lot of limitations to doing that. If you have one organization that's using Office 365, we recommend you have a single tenant for working with that. You can manage all your users in one place, get them to that tenant, and your users can work together. There are a few things that you can do if you are forced for some reason to have multiple tenants in Office 365 and have them work together. Although you can't get a consolidated global address list, partly for some of the reasons that Ross was just telling us about on the previous slide, it is possible to have users in one tenant listed as contacts in another tenant. So in exchange, in the global address list, you can list them as contacts, although they're largely external to that tenant. You can do SharePoint sharing, but you are going to need to use external sharing model that we have right now. That external sharing model is essentially saying, hey, here's a folder or a directory, please share this with an external user, and then you're required to put in that user's email address. So you don't have those lists of email addresses, you can't manage those users, but you can use that external sharing to share cross tenants. Also, FreeBSY Federation is available, so you can access FreeBSY information from the calendar from another tenant. And you can do link presence federation, so that when you connect two tenants, the link online services, you can have those two tenants see whether the users on the other tenant are free or busy. And lastly, the last point I have here is if you have multiple tenants, there are lots of third-party tools that can help you to merge those together so that you can get a better experience. So that is the section that we wanted to talk about on synchronization. Is there anyone with burning questions about sync before we move on to federation that wants to come up to the microphone and ask a question? No? Okay, great. So we'll move on and talk about our federation topics now. And it's back to you.
Back to you. I think I say that. So we have a quick summary here of the different types of protocols that are used within Office 365 and supported through Azure Active Directory. So you've got sort of on the left-hand side there a bunch of different terminologies on those. So there's effectively a WS star protocol that's listed through there. The WS Federation is very similar. It's a passive protocol. It's supported by ADFS as well as some other third-party SDSs. And by choice, the WS star, Trust Federation, et cetera, are the most well-used protocols by the Office clients. So these are going to give you the best experience. The Shibboleth product, we're sort of separating out Shibboleth and SAML here. And the reason we separate them out is that Shibboleth provides a slightly more functionality, if you will, than a generic SAML 2.0 implementation. In the case of Shibboleth, with what we call the ECP, or the Enhanced Client Profile Pack, it does offer something similar to what we'll call the WS Trust model. And that allows you to get a different set of applications running, predominantly around being able to use Exchange and Outlook with that model, where the general SAML 2.0 compliant setup is a very much a passive protocol. So SAML being very passive only supports those passive applications. There is a, on the last bullet there, which is kind of new for us, is we have a component within Azure Active Directory, commonly referred to as ADL, is the Active Directory Authentication Library, which effectively allows you to use OAuth to communicate with the cloud. Now, OAuth being a very passive-based protocol, works well with SAML as well as WS passive. So it's something that Azure Active Directory uses today. We're going to talk a little bit more about it when we talk about how Office is moving to the OAuth model in the future. So I'll leave that conversation until then. So from a passive standpoint, it's important to note there that really what we're talking about is clients that use the browser to get to where they need to go. So SharePoint Online, OA, the Outlook Web Access clients, as well as the Office 365 portal are all examples of a passive client.
Why is it called passive, Ross?
Why is it called passive? It's called passive mainly because the way that the client operates is very passive, right? So the client attempts to, there we go. What the client does in this model is, you should talk to the licensing guy. What the client attempts to do here is not resolve anything. The client plays dumb. The client says, hey, you've got to go, effectively, I'm going to follow a URL and I'm going to show some web content. I'm going to show a browser page, follow that URL wherever I'm told to go to. I'm going to render whatever HTML comes in the browser. The user's going to do what they do with it when they go somewhere else. I'm just going to keep following it around until eventually somebody says, yes, it worked, or no, it didn't. So it's a very much a very passive approach to trying to authenticate. There's no, I'm going to take the username and password from the client and I'm going to attempt to then resolve that somewhere and follow the bouncy ball without any further interaction with the client, which is very much what the active protocols are trying to do. What they're trying to do is grab some credentials from the end user and then follow the balls around to follow out and out where I can actually validate that password, where I can get that credential back and move forward from there. So the sign-in assistant, the Office sign-in assistant, is actually used by the Pro Plus. It's also used by Word, Excel, PowerPoint, connecting to SharePoint Online, and it's used by Link. So really, the Office sign-in assistant is the active client. So in this instance, you could argue that Word, Excel, PowerPoint are somewhat passive in the way that they pass the information to the sign-in assistant, who is then very active about trying to figure out where to go.
But that's not actually right, is it?
It's not quite.
The clients do use the active protocols.
Technically, yes. So the client, by passing it on to an active client, is then effectively, which doesn't allow you to prompt for authentication. So it has to be able to resolve the username and password to some source, and that's why they use those active endpoints. So we've recently introduced with Password Sync the ability to effectively do password sync with federated accounts. And the reason this is important is that when I set up federation is a big switch. Okay, so everybody in the organization must use a federated account in order to be able to log in. What we found is that people get to situations where their ADFS server, although we say deploy it highly available, it's not foolproof. There are points in time no matter how much high availability you have, something will go wrong. My internet connection goes down, something of that nature. In these cases, when you have a failure of your SDS on premises, the cloud can't connect the user to it in order to authenticate, and therefore authentication fails for that end user. So password.
This is, of course, very different from using password hash sync, where you're enabling Azure AD to do that password validation. And so it's up to our service level agreement to keep that going and keep that running. If you're using ADFS, then the user's sign-in is gated on us being able to connect to your ADFS server on premises. So being highly available for that ADFS server is very critical to users being able to continue to log on.
That's correct. So what we're effectively doing here is by saying when my ADFS server fails, I can go into the Office 365 portal or into the management, more likely into PowerShell, and convert my domain to effectively a cloud-based domain, allowing then users to use that password that I previously synced so that they can continue to use services even though my ADFS server is no longer available. So that's a change from single sign-on to sort of password hash sync sign-on. They will see some more prompts in that scenario, but at least they're able to log into the service. As an important note, right now that takes a couple of hours. So it can take up to 2 hours for that transfer to occur. So from the flip from effectively being federated on-prem to being cloud managed can take up to 2 hours. So we are working on trying to reduce that time frame. I'd like it to be more like 5 minutes. but it is up to 2 hours as it stands today.
Does that mean that the passwords, the password hashes, are then being synchronized, or is that being used until you encrypt that?
So the question is, does that mean that the password hashes are being synchronized but not used until we flip? The answer is yes. So effectively, when you're federated, the password, even though if we have one synced up into the cloud, it's not used until you flip it around. That's correct.
And in fact, the change in behavior prior to this, we would not take the passwords, even if you had said to synchronize them, the password hashes, we would drop them in Azure AD. So we didn't have them, and you weren't able to switch back from federated to synchronized sign-in.
Correct.
Just to clarify that two-hour delay, is that in both directions? So if I switch from federated to standard and then my ADFS server comes back up, I've got another 2 hours to go back the other way?
So the question is, yeah, that's a good question. It's actually, it's an interesting nuance. The flip from federated to managed can take up to 2 hours. The flip back can happen within a few minutes. It's a nuance of the way that we do certain operations within the cloud. But the flip back can take only a few minutes. So something else that's been introduced recently is around being able to use an alternative login ID, and it removes the dependency on users' UPNs. So how many people have like a .local domain or something similar, non-routable domain?
That's quite a lot of you.
Yeah. Usually I say to you at this point, come see me afterwards, I've only got bad news. But today I have good news for you. So the good news for you is that recently we added support, or the ADFS team actually added support. It's in the 2012 R2 version of ADFS with the April roll-up. So that's how soon it was. It was just last month that they got this sorted out. Effectively what they did was they allow us now to specify what the actual UPN value is that you want to use for authentication. So the example I give on the web, we can give you some links to the documentation. The example they use is by using the mail attribute. Okay. Now the attribute that you specify needs to be in the global catalog, it needs to be indexed, it needs to look like an email address, so it needs to have the user at domain type structure to it. And it needs to be single valued. But if you know, you can use pretty much any attribute in the directory that fulfills that criteria. And we have a documentation that talks about how to actually modify the directory sync tool so that it synchronizes that value up correctly. So the value in the cloud is representative of that, as well as the way that you configure ADFS. And it is supported cross-forest. So I'm going to give you a little demo in a minute. I have two forests, and I use a common SMTP domain across those two forests. Now, we still need to make sure we have uniqueness, so we're not breaking any of the rules around UPN being in the cloud. It still has the same restrictions and requirements that are used for UPN as a UPN attribute would be. But it does allow you to get past the problems of, I can't change my UPN from .local. I have smart cards, or I have existing applications that rely on it in that manner, and I can't actually make that change. So this allows you then to get up into the cloud using an alternative attribute for it.
Shall we take a look?
Let's take a demo. Takes a little flipper. Okay, demo. So I have two different forests here. So I have one forest here which has a user in it. Oh. And just to prove there's no smoke and mirrors here, the account is F1, so Forest 1. I was very creative with naming these guys. So it's Forest 1, and they live in a .local. And what I've done is I've sent an email address for this particular user. So he's Forest 1 user 5 at my particular domain. Okay, and I also have another Forest 2, because I was very creative with my names. And this guy is user 2. In Forest 5, and again, his account is in a completely different forest. So, without further ado, let's see if this actually works. So I'm going to try and log in, so I'm just going to go to the generic login page. Let's try using a real user. So I'm going to use Forest 1, user 5. Five. It's going to redirect me to my ADFS server. And this environment also uses AAD sync to sync up my two forests. So I'm going to tell it to continue because I use nothing but the best certificates. and here I am. I'm logged in. So now I'm logged in as Forest 1 user 5 using my domain, and it's showing my correct email address. Let's just sign out just to prove that we can log in, different user. And we're going to use my Forest 2 guy. He's going to redirect. And if you pay very close attention, you'll see that I'm actually using the ADFS server and deployed on Forest 1. So my Forest 1 server, there's a trust between my two forests. So what's happening here is under the hood, ADFS, when I configured the alternative login identity, I told it the two forests that these users could live in. So I told it, hey, you'll find people based in Forest 1 and Forest 2. What ADFS is doing is effectively, when I submit the request, it's going to do a lookup. So it's going to try and look my user up based on the attribute I specified, and I used male. So it's going to look up on that particular attribute simultaneously across my two forests, find the user, retrieve the UPN, validate the password, and then return a token up to the cloud. So it does have a little extra round trips here as far as more searches on the directory during authentication. But if we get this all right and I type the right password, it should log me in, and I should see myself as Forest 2 at user 5, all from the one shiny demo.
So that's great. We had quite a lot of people put their hand up to say they had a non-routable domain. How many folks does that unblock to get to Office 365? Half a dozen? Okay, that's great. Great.
Give you the clicker-clacker.
The clicker-clacker. Hey, so the next slide, the next topic that we have here to talk about is if you have multiple domains, and I'm talking here about your UPN domains, you can federate multiple domains in a single tenant. Each federate operation is done on a specific domain, so you can add multiple domains. And what this creates, and what I want to talk about here, is it enables our home realm discovery. When Ross is signing into Office 365 and that login screen there, the login screen doesn't know what tenant he's signing into, and it doesn't know what directory to go and look him up. And the way that it finds that out is it looks at the domain name after the at symbol, and it does what we call home realm discovery, and it uses that domain and figures out what is the tenant and what is the directory that has to be looked up in order to validate this user and sign them on. So Ross did mention earlier that each DNS address that you use can be a separate domain. You can use subdomains of your domain as the UPN that we use. There's a trick if you want to federate the parent with Office 365, and you also want to federate some child. So if you have child 1, child 2, or of at .company.com, you're going to need to federate the children first. Have I got that right?
Yeah, so there's a nuance in here. Effectively, when you federate company.com and then add child one will automatically inherit from the parent. So there's this level of inheritance. So by default, children inherit from their parents. Fancy that. If that doesn't work for you, say you have a lot of EDUs fall into this scenario where I have staff and I want to use ADFS, and then I use students and I want them to be Shibboleth, but I want to effectively have staff as, you know, contoso.edu, and I want my students to be students.contoso.edu, for example. In that model, because the child inherits from the parent, you couldn't set up federation for the child differently than the parent. The trick that Paul was alluding to is that, and we want to fix this so that you can do it without this particular workaround, is to register the child domain first. So if you registered students.contoso.com or students.contoso.edu and then registered contoso.edu, we would, in the directory, consider both of those to be top-level domains. And top-level domains then can be set up for federation however you like. So you could then federate them across. Just keep in mind that once that parent domain has been registered, any additional children will inherit from that parent. So it's a little nuance in the way the system works today. It's something that we're we will address eventually, but it's going to take some time.
Then the other part of using multiple domains and doing home realm discovery is the tip there at the bottom of the screen. You can use these URLs to shortcut the home realm discovery to avoid that initial screen that users see where we don't know what your domain is that you're logging on with.
So just as one other, there's some good Office 365 documentation around using CNAMEs, particularly for OWA, for getting into OWA. If you CNAME, I think you can do mail.outlook.com, oh, sorry, mail.contesa.com, and that'll give you a very good way of getting back to, if you're federated, getting you all the way back to on-prem by effectively, it generates this URL correctly for you on the way through.
Yeah, you can also CNAME, say, SharePoint.yourcompany.com over to yourtenantname.sharepoint.com in the same way. All right, so that's the end of our section on federation. I'd like to invite again, if there's burning questions about federation, folks would want to come to the mic, and then we'll move on. There is.
Hi, do you have any plan to support UPN change between different federated domains?
It's a very good question. So today, when you if you have two federated domains, a federated domain A.com and federated domain B.com, it's not possible to directly move a user from one federated domain to another. I think that's effectively what your question is. Today, you need to move through a managed domain in order, or a cloud-managed domain for that to come through. It's actually the way that we do plan on trying to fix that. The problem that we have today is it's to do with the immutable identifier and the fact that the identifier that we use to, in a federated scenario, to identify the user, that immutable identifier is by, you're going to love this one, is immutable. So we don't actually allow you to change it. So what we have to do is when we move to a cloud-based identity, we effectively strike the immutable identifier out. It stays in the directory, but we strike it from the authentication system. When we move it to the new federated domain, it's reinserted as the new identifier. That's the reason that we have this nuance. What we're trying to do is get to a means of being able to move that immutable identifier, effectively make it mostly immutable as opposed to completely immutable. So it is definitely something we're working on, but it is a restriction today.
All right. So we'll talk a little bit about non-Microsoft technologies now. So we have a variety of different sync options you can use if you have a SAML identity provider. So if you have an identity provider that's a non-Microsoft identity provider and you also have Active Directory and you've connected those two together, then Directory Sync and the DirSync tool is still going to be the best option. If you can't do that, so you don't have Active Directory at all, or your identity provider is not connected to Active Directory, or for some reason you can't connect from Active Directory out to the internet, then you have a couple of options. You're essentially looking at doing some scripting here to be able to synchronize users individually and using one of these two endpoints that's listed here. We did talk about in the Azure Active Directory sync services slide when Archer was talking about that. There is plans for that to support non-AD sources, such as LDAP v3 directory, which we had back there. And we also have a connector. We currently have a connector which is available for production use for Forefront Identity Manager, which can connect to LDAP v3 directories. So you have a variety of different sync options that you can choose from if you are using a non-Microsoft source there. We can also do federation with non-Microsoft identity providers. You can do, of course, sign-in federation to a SAML 2 provider. Shibboleth is an example of a SAML provider, but we also have SAML available to connect with third parties. And that's how we're going to do the password validation on-premises. And it currently only supports passive authentication, so that means specifically that it doesn't work with Office client applications, and there's quite a lot of those Office client applications that it won't work with. But if you have an environment where you're primarily using our web-based applications, so you're primarily using Outlook Web Access, SharePoint Online, and the Office client web apps, then SAML 2 is a great option right now. We are adding passive auth support into the Office clients. So if you've been following along, that means that the Office clients will open a web browser, and the web browser will have a URL from the identity provider, and the identity provider will show a login page and various other pages as needed until the identity provider can pass an authenticated token or a disallowed back to the Office client. So we are looking at adding that to Office client applications by the end of the year. We have some guidance about this at the link there. The slides, of course, will be available, so you can grab that and take a look.
So that last bullet there is an interesting bullet, Paul. Yes. It's effectively stating that we don't support, a lot of people try and say, well, maybe I can put ADFS to do protocol translation in front of my SAML provider. It doesn't actually work for you in the multi-hop setup. And the reason for that is, again, that the active clients only support a single hop. So they go to the identity provider and then they go to the next hop. So they're expecting to be able to resolve it on the next hop. If they get yet another redirect to another identity provider, they have a little lie down. So unfortunately, you can't sort of put ADFS in front of an existing SAML implementation to be able to bypass this and sort of, if you like, do protocol transitions from SAML to WS star.
All right, so we have a little bit more talking here about the Office clients and how they will be supporting passive auth. We've announced this back in February, so there's some information on the Office blogs. And what we're doing is we're using this ADL or Active Directory authentication library and implementing that inside of the Office clients. And actually we have another slide about this. And in fact, we also have a diagram.
Do you want me to walk through that?
Yeah, I'd love for you to walk through. So Ross, if you could just walk through how this works once we've got ADL into the Office client applications, how does assignment work?
Sure. So we can walk through that. In this flow, let's assume that we're doing something special. How many people use multi-factor authentication on premises? You're going to love this section of the slideware, if you will. So in today, for multi-factor authentication, it's very difficult. So the client generally has to enter some sort of custom thing. They've got to enter a PIN from an RSA. They've got to solve some, you know, into their shoe size, some particularly exciting piece of infrastructure to be able to get a token from the identity provider. So in previously, that was unheard of with Outlook. With this new update, we can get down that path. So effectively, how do we do that? So the first thing that happens is Office makes a request up to effectively get a token. So they say, so I want to go to Office 365 and get my mailbox. When they do that, they make a request then up to the service, and the service says, I don't know how to deal with you. You need a token. So it returns effectively a URL that says, you've got to go here to get a token. That URL is intercepted by ADL. So ADL sees that come back down and says, ah, I know what that means. I've got to follow that and get a token for you. So it pushes it up to the directory. The directory, in this case, Azure Active Directory, says, that particular namespace appears to be federated or needs some additional information. In this case, we're going to say it's federated. So it shoots it back down to ADL. ADL sees that and says, oh, I know how to follow a redirect. Again, only one. I follow that redirect up into the Active Directory environment. And basically what it's going to get from the Active Directory environment now, I'm just going to make sure we get the right pull. What it's going to get back from that is a web page. Okay, so instead of getting the standard username and password type prompt that it could do integrated auth with, let's say it gets back a web page that says you have to enter, you know, your office number and your shoe size, and if you can get those two things right, I'll let you into the system. So what it does then is it pops that web browser. The web browser, you enter what you need to enter in order to satisfy that request. So if it's, you know, put in your smart card in your machine, enter your shoe size, whatever it happens to be, that once that is completed and it's got back a SAML token from the identity provider, it passes that up to Azure Active Directory, which then returns what we call a JOT token. So this is a JSON Web Auth token You can think of it as kind of a different type of SAML token, if you will. The details of which then include who the user is, it's signed by us, it's all good to go. It's exactly what the Office system needs, and then it gets sent back up to the Office client. Office client validates the JOT, says, yep, that was exactly what I need. I know that was Paul's mailbox, and I can send the data now down to Outlook. So what you really got here is very similar flow to what you have in the any of the sort of passive flows that a client would do, except for the Outlook client is able to sort of look at the web broker traffic that comes through. So it can figure out, do I understand this traffic? You know, so if there's integrated auth going on, it'll try and do integrated auth. But if it starts to get HTML back, it'll render it in a browser and say, hey, Mr. User, this is for you. Please do what you need to do in order to satisfy this request. And if eventually it gets back a token, it can send it on through. So it really gives you a sort of passive view of the way that the token is retrieved and solves a lot of those problems about being able to deal with 2FA or other types of identity providers that are purely passive-based, you know, SAML, for example. Back to you, Paul.
Back to me. All right, we're packing our six topics into this talk. We've just got 10 minutes left here. I want to have a quick call out for the Works with Office 365 Identity Program, which is the program that we use to test interoperability with third-party identity providers for Federation use. You can see some of our partners that have gone through testing and qualification here. And so Microsoft supports Office 365. We encourage you to look at tested identity providers and the version numbers and any exceptions that we found during that testing at this link that we have, aka.ms/SSO providers. So we have two more slides to show, and they're about troubleshooting identity management. And the first one is about DirSync.
So about DirSync troubleshooting. DirSync just takes your on-prem data to the cloud. On-prem, we don't have that many restrictions, but your cloud directory has some restrictions and some compliance things that it has to comply with in order for all the cloud applications to work. We have this tool called as IDFix. You run it, it tells you all the errors that you need to fix before you start DirSyncing. It's a very good tool. If you don't use it, if you don't make those changes, you'll be the technical notification contact will be getting a lot of emails about the errors, and that's how DirSync actually reports its errors. Some of the things that you should look for is clean all duplicate proxy addresses. We only allow unique proxy addresses on the cloud. At the same time, we also just allow unique UPNs on the cloud. UPNs is what your users actually use for logging in. As Ross said, these are the credentials. So it needs to be unique per user. For DirSync, if you get into any issues, you can also check the Windows Event Viewer. We have a lot of blog posts online which tells you what kind of error happens and what kind of event ID you should be looking for and what information you can use for troubleshooting thereon.
So from an ADFS perspective, there's a really good tool up there which allows you to verify your setup. So that's effectively the test connectivity. It's a remote connectivity site. It has both tests for passive as well as for the richer clients as well as testing Outlook. So it's a really good tool to be able to get up and make sure that the infrastructure is working the way you expect it to. The other is really, the rest of the sort of troubleshooting here is to make sure you don't get into trouble, if you will. So make sure you've got lots of sort of servers running or enough redundancy in the system in order to be able to support a failure or even just straightforward things like, I want to be able to patch a server. So patching a server, rebooting them can take varying amounts of time. During that time, if the server is offline, it's not going to be servicing requests, and potentially users are not going to be able to log into the cloud during that time. So it's important to make sure you've got enough infrastructure. So we'd recommend at least two there. If you're interested in running sort of running ADFS and a direct domain controller up in the cloud in order to be able to sort of provide some level of offsite or backup center redundancy, there are some documents that talk about that, but it's important to note that ADFS by itself is a little bit useless. All right. It doesn't actually authenticate users. It's really there to be able to deal with the protocols of, you know, effectively moving and sending the right protocols up into the cloud. So it does rely on AD for authentication. So if you're going to put Azure, ADFS in Azure on a VM in Azure, then make sure that you've got a DC with it. Otherwise, it'll still need to be able to communicate to your on-premises infrastructure. The second thing here is, or the third bullet here, is really about ADFS itself has a lot of functionality, can be used for a lot of different things, business-to-business collaboration. We tend to only, with Office 365, we use a small portion of it. So you don't need to necessarily implement a whole bunch of infrastructure around it. The thing that's really important here is around the way that we use certificates. We get lots of questions. Should I have a public signing certificate for tokens? Do I do token encryption, etc.? Within the cloud, we really only care about the SSL cert that's used, and it must be publicly trusted. So make sure that your SSL cert is on the allowed list from Office 365. There are some SSL providers who do provide a public SSL that we don't support. So make sure it's on that list. There's a link in the ADFS documentation for that. But as far as the signing certs, token signing certs go, we don't care. Self-signed work really well. They roll over really well. The cloud monitors your ADFS server to make sure that those certs, as they get changed in that instance, we come and pick them up automatically. So self-signed certs are fine for token signing. Last 2 points are really about just the... We're 443. So we really are only SSL here, so make sure that you have good connectivity through that port. And there's some tools coming as well to help with deployment of ADFS and making sure you verify and get it right the first time. The reason being is when you federate a domain, it's a big switch. Everybody now must log on with a federated account. If you've got some infrastructure problem with the deployment or you haven't got quite the network connectivity you thought going correctly, you may not be able to log in after converting the domain to being federated. We're trying to help customers get through that, but it's by far the biggest problem we see right now with people. When they first get to federation, they're missing a piece, they didn't quite get DNS right, their load balancer wasn't quite configured, and they're not able to log on. And that's that's effectively a situation where everybody is down now in that particular domain. So it's important to make sure that you test this as much as possible. And we do have some articles about how do I sort of set this up and make sure my ADFS server is right before I actually move it into production.
All right. Thank you, Ross and Archul. So here's a summary. Here's the six different topics that we've talked through today. I really hope this was something of interest for you that's been useful there. We're really keen to get your feedback and hear your questions. We have time, I think all three of us, at the booths to take questions.
We have some limited time. Anshul and I actually have to run to another one, but we'll certainly be around after this for the next 15, 20 minutes to answer any questions that come up.
Okay, well maybe I'll be at the booths. So we'd love to hear your feedback. One of the great ways to give us feedback is to fill in an eval for our talk here. Here's a QR code that you can use to do that. We have run up right against time. I hope it was helpful having those questions through the talk. And we'll take more questions until we get kicked off. Thank you.